I just wanted to let you know that I didn't finish my sermon, so you're going to get the rest of it. Seriously, we're glad you're here for this winter convocation. And I got dragooned into this. That's another thing about the ministry. You never know when somebody's going to come in at the last minute. And Dean Vogel went somewhere. I don't know. Don't think my sermon made him sick. But I'm taking his place. But this is about the best time to do it because I'm going to introduce our speaker who's sort of my boss. I've retired from the seminary. Nobody here can tell me what to do except students, the faculty, the president, and the janitors. But I'm spending more and more of my time and have worked at Chapel of the Cross. It's not Chapel of the Holy Cross. As the people are holy, the cross isn't, I don't know, something like that. Chapel of the Cross Lutheran up, and you know, want to know where it is? It's at Interstate 270 and 365, which is Lewis and Clark, heading toward Alton. You'll see, you can't miss us. Pastor Stein is going to talk about the team relationships from a worship stance. And he's been our pastor now for better than a year and has gradually begun to teach us as a staff and as a congregation how we do this. Certainly he's has had enough experience to be able to tell us something that we don't know. Even first-year people might learn something. I don't know. I'm supposed to laugh at that. Come on, guys. What would I do without Schmelder? What would you do without Schmelder? Pastor Stein graduated from these sacred halls, as you can see. I'm reading now. You can read, too. Let me read it. In 1960, and received an M.A. in guidance counseling from Michigan State, served parishes in Howard City and Flint, Michigan, and came to us Chapel of the Cross from St. John's in Seward, which, as many of you know, is directly across the street from the Concordia College in Seward, and is a large parish, as ours is. I'm not sure if we know exactly how many members we have. As Dr. Jack Price used to say at Springfield, we know exactly how many students we have. We think we know how many wives there are, but only God knows how many kids there are. And so we may have a few problems like that. Nevertheless, it is a large parish, and both experimentally and on the basis of experience, Pastor Stein is well qualified to share it with us. Pastor Stein.
I didn't know I was his boss, and I thought perhaps the first act I could do as his boss would be to delegate this presentation to him and sit back down. What I have to share to you today obviously comes out of a practical experience in the parish. I would like to perhaps introduce it that way, simply saying that I do not really claim that I'm an expert in anything. However, I have had 25 years of very, very interesting ministry experiences, and I've been blessed with working with wonderful Christian people over those years. So what I have to share with you during these next few moments comes out of the context of just that, someone who enjoys the parish ministry very much. I can't say enough about that, that in spite of the ups and the downs that occur in any particular part of life and in the parish, I can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing than what I'm doing now. So it comes out of that context, and what I'm going to share then I hope will reflect that same kind of joy in the ministry. I chose the topic that I did, trying to remember exactly what you said it was, but team ministry with sort of a worship stance, partly because I believe that when we talk about ministry and working together with other people, and that's what I'm going to talk about today, we have to really approach it from the viewpoint of who we are in relationship to God. Now, my experience as I look at the subject of team ministry and the whole concept of working together is that perhaps, I'm going to use a negative statement, that graduates don't seem to really understand how that works as well as they ought to. I base that on perhaps some of my own experience and also the complaints that I quite often receive from brother clergy when it comes to working with other staff people. Who's at fault? I'm not always sure. However, it seems to me that we could perhaps do at this level build proper attitudes to prevent much of the conflict and the pain that I think occurs in working together in ministry. That's why I chose the whole idea of talking about the team approach to ministry. Perhaps it would do well also if I could share just a little bit about my personal background in terms of parishes, to help you understand the context out of which I'm speaking. I've had every type of team ministry possible. My first parish was a dual parish in western Michigan. It was a parish that was 75 years old, where the people drove past one another's parish to go to the other one. They were all related to one another. Their names were Yankee and Anna Miller, and their first names were Emmett and Eno and Hugo, and you name it. They were all the kinds that you names that you would read about in some fictional story, but they were real names. These people had been in conflict with one another for many years. So my first experience was simply the team was those two parishes, 185 of those people. And when I got there, I would have to honestly say that my wife and I looked at the buildings, which in 1963 we sold for a total of $14,000. So you know what kind of buildings they were. And we cried. We literally cried. I mean, real tears. And I gave myself 2 years. And I thought that was pretty good because that's what everybody else does, isn't it? That leaves the seminary, they are in their parish 2 years. That's, by the way, one of the major complaints that you hear from lay people out in the parish. Why don't our pastors from the seminary stay longer? Just something we'll maybe address again a little bit later. That parish, however, I was there 7.5 years, and from no team in terms of professional staff, we started adding people, and these were just simple staff members. We had a secretary, a custodian. By the way, everybody has at least one professional staff person when they arrive at a parish, and that's the organist. That can either be a blessing or a curse, but that is, you always have one person that's paid on the staff in addition to yourself. That parish background was very rich, however. I stayed there for 7.5 years because in that period of time, these two parishes, through using the people as part of the team, we began to help them understand what working together could be like. And we were richly blessed by God because these two parishes actually amalgamated. And when we left, the 185 had grown to 500. And it was just a very rich experience. In fact, when I left, I felt rather guilty because we were in the process of calling a DCE. And I left to go to another parish, which was in Flint, Michigan, a complete opposite to where my first parish was, which was a rural resort area. Pardon me. And this was an urban suburban parish with a school. We had, at that particular parish, 4 teachers to start with, and it varied between 4 to 10 teachers during the period of the 9 years I was there. Also, at that particular time, I began working with vicars, and worked with vicars for 15 years after that particular time. I moved to Seward, Nebraska. That was where I think I really learned the most about team relationships. Because when you're across the street from a synodical college and you have all kinds of people that are trained in the ministry of the church, they very quickly remind you of what team is all about. And I had as many different definitions of team as there were probably people on the staff. In that particular parish, we had a pastor, a vicar. We had several part-time pastors, DCE, a music director, and about 16 teachers in the school. My present parish is a little different kind of arrangement. This is the first time I haven't been involved with a Christian day school for 18 years, and we are now in the process of building staff. Dr. Schultz, as he indicated, is part of the ministry of Chapel of the Cross. He's on the pastoral staff, helps with the preaching, teaching, and many, many other things on a part-time basis. Chapel of the Cross had a very interesting kind of ministry. Those of you who have been in the city at all would remember that Pastor Milton Naus was the pastor there, and he basically operated the parish, did a very fine job at doing this, but I'm not Superman, and he was. And so we're in the process now of building staff, and since I've been there, we now have on staff 2 people who would be listed as DCEs. We have also another DCE intern who we hope will become a permanent part of our staff this summer, and each one of these DCEs has a specialty in ministry. In addition to Dr. Schultz, we have 2 other pastoral people part-time, have several lay assistants. I see a couple of the seminary students. We have what we call not only field workers at Chapel of the Cross, but seminary staff, because we do employ about 50 to 60 hours a week of seminary staff to help us with the youth program, some of our educational ministry. And probably more important than a lot of people realize, I think the staff that I presently have, and I'll elaborate on this a little bit later, simply is blessed most of all, and this I inherited with a very large secretarial group and good custodial help. For a parish of our size, we have approximately now about 150 hours of secretarial help a week, and that's probably one of the more important tasks that we have in terms of the staff. So I actually have come out of a number of different kinds of settings in terms of the various ministries, and this is the experience that I'll share with you now in terms of how perhaps we can best relate to these various staff people. I might just simply say at the outset, what I say about professional staff or service staff on a parish as they work together in team would simply have to apply to all of the members of the parish. I really believe that they're all part of the team. That sort of fits in with the universal priesthood of believers, obviously, but I'm talking from a practical standpoint that the way we treat staff, the way we treat one another, I think it all applies. I think it's a working with kind of relationship. Now, most of you will probably start, as I did, maybe in a parish where there is no paid staff other than an organist. Some of you will be on a multiple staff as an assistant pastor, and perhaps you'll charge right into working with other staff and see the joys that come with this. As I, my goal this morning, and really as we look at this subject, is not to precipitate a debate on, with regard to the varying viewpoints on what should be called a minister. There's a lot of stuff written about that. But rather to share from my personal experience a very practical view of how public ministers, pastors, teachers, DCEs, can more effectively work together. I'm going to share with you simply my style. Now, there's a dozen different styles, and they obviously all can work well, but this is my personal style of doing it. And I'm going to really divide my presentation into two parts. First of all, what I would just simply say, the joys of working together with other team members, professional people. And obviously, I'll share a few frustrations. I'd like to define what I mean by team, first of all. Now, team, in my opinion, means simply working together. I think it is one of the extremes that happen in parish work is that when people talk about team, what they're saying on this end is, since we're team, everybody's equal, everybody does the same thing, and nobody's responsible to anyone else. The other extreme is that obviously the pastor is the boss, and he dictates everything that happens in a parish. My concept of team, as I define it, simply is this, that it is a group of people working together to obviously do ministry in a particular place. There must, however, be a captain of the team, someone who coordinates it, someone who makes sure their direction is given, someone who has an overall view of that. Most of the time, that's the pastor. It does not have to be the pastor. There are parishes that work very effectively where someone else does that type of work. But most often, the pastor would be that person. So I guess right along with that, I would simply say that in a team ministry situation, there is not equality in terms of responsibility. Our ministries are validated by the Word of God. In that sense, the validation is the same. But the tasks are different. There cannot be two people doing the same tasks. And I'm going to elaborate a little bit further on that down the line. But team for me is, first of all, people. people working together. Now, how do you get people working together in a proper way? What's the way that you can take all of this and make it happen? There is no way that you can have everybody in the same level, no matter how hard you try. So how do you get them working together in spite of that? Bill Amice, who's the executive for the program Youth Ministry and Christian Education for the Northern Illinois District, in the appendix to the 1981 LEA publication, and I hope if you ever have a chance to read this one, I think it's a pretty good book called Perspectives on Ministry. He summarizes what, in my sense, is my personal approach to ministry. And he says, any consideration of the public ministry of the church has to come to grips seriously with the scriptural concept of ministry. To put it simply, the bottom line of that word is servant. Now, I guess I would say, first of all, thank God we are servants. For true joy, really true joy in ministry comes only from a servant, or what I would like to call a worship stance. Isn't that what servants are? Worshippers? Let me phrase it this way. I think good team relationships must begin with worship. People who daily join together in worship, acknowledging that the gifts that they have for ministry are indeed just that, gifts, gifts of God's grace. And I think people, when they look at themselves, first of all, as gifts of God's grace, and look at the other people on the staff the same way, they look at each other differently, and they serve differently than those people whose ministries do not begin with worship. I think I'm going to be real honest with you when it comes to looking at my own personal life and where I come from. Every day I get on my knees and thank God for the grace that He's given me, and particularly the gift of allowing me to do what I'm doing. 26 or 27 years ago, and I think Bill Smelder would, who's a good friend of mine, would bear that out. If anybody would have told me I would be standing in front of a bunch of seminary students talking about team ministry, and 25 years later I'd have told you were a liar, because there was absolutely no way that I felt that I would ever have anything to offer to a group of seminary students. Maybe I still don't, but nevertheless, I think that people who understand God's grace, who begin their ministry with a worship stance, just all kinds of wonderful things happen to them. I cannot believe all of the opportunities for ministry that God has given me and the people that have been around me. And it all begins, I believe, because you understand where grace is. And I think that if we understand grace properly, we also understand our people better. And that's why I probably, even though I know there are people in the, and I'm not putting my head in the sand, that have given me difficulty over the years, I guess I really never have done what I hear a lot of my brothers do, look at them as alligators or troublemakers. Because, gentlemen, I'm an alligator. I'm a troublemaker. That's where I am in relationship to God. And so, if I understand who I am, then maybe it's easier for me to understand the people. The alligators, the troublemakers that are referred to by so many people are really people who are really hurting and need ministry. And when we call them that, we have really haven't heard what they were saying. And that That deals with team as well as people in the parish. There are no alligators. Not if we understand grace. So I guess if we approach it that way, then we also look at one another in a different way. One of the things that I've enjoyed the most over the 25 years I've been involved is working, probably the highlight of my ministry was working with vicars. I just probably never enjoyed anything more. In fact, it's one of the things when I came to Chapel of the Cross, I knew I couldn't do any longer, because here we got these bunch of guys out there that are first and second year guys, and we got a fourth year guys coming back helping us out there, and poor vicar wouldn't have any identity at all. And so we just couldn't have a vicar where we were at. But vicars always were very stimulating to me, also always forced me to evaluate what I was doing. And I have always had the best vicars. And again, I think maybe that's because, again, my expectations of them were high. And I think if we have expectations, high expectations of one another as we work together, we'll get the best out of one another. In this sense, that whoever we're working with in a particular situation and time, I've got the best possible staff right now that I could have at this time in ministry. That doesn't mean it's complete. Doesn't mean that we can't add people to it. But if we work from that viewpoint, we automatically are going to work together. And I think as the pastor or the primary leader in the parish, it's probably my responsibility or the responsibility of any of you when you are in that particular setting to set that stance. I think you are the ones who have to set it. And by the way, pastors aren't the only ones who are supposed to enjoy themselves in the team ministry. And I think sometimes the way we act, that's the way we think it is. We get the gravy and everybody else has to take the leftovers. And I think we need to set up our staff ministry in such a way so that people working with us feel that we trust them, that we think they're the best, that we give them opportunities for ministry and work with them in such a way that they are doing things that they enjoy as well. But back to my original promise, good team relationships begin by praising God for the gifts that He's given one another. In other words, again, that worship stance. Jealousies are really Satan's tool to divide, but they're less possible when you have a servant stance. You rejoice in each other's gifts. You don't, you're not jealous over against what the other one has. Every parish I've been in has always had somebody in it or around me or in the general area who could do better what I was doing at the present moment than what I was doing. Now, maybe what I'm doing, the combination of things I do because God put me in that place and I'm doing well, but there was always somebody around me who could do what I was doing at that moment better. And I think if we remember that, we're not jealous, because we just rejoice in the fact that though they have those gifts and we can share them together. I might also say the worship stance eliminates the God stance. To think we are God is a common failure of both old and new pastors. And it's a barrier to team relationships. I don't know where we got the idea. But more often than we care to admit, we think God's will is our will, and woe to that man who thinks otherwise. You put two or three people together on the same staff who think that way, and all hell breaks loose. It just can't help but happen. And I can remember several staff people like that. We had a teacher. I won't mention his name. Flint. He was about 3 inches taller than I was and weighed about 100 pounds more. And he was impressive. I mean, he was, and he had a voice that was, I mean, you could hear him, I bet you could hear him all the way to, whatever, to 270. I mean, I'd sit in my office and I'd hear him yelling at kids, "You dummies," you know, and all kinds of stuff like this. But he was a master at intimidation. He could take and walk up to you and pull by the passages this far away from you and on any subject you wanted. And he made the lay people just feel as small as can be. I have, he was one example of this, but I think we also, as pastors, are guilty of doing the same thing, trying to intimidate the people around us rather than really where God didn't call us to pontificate or intimidate, but to serve. Again, if we remember the meaning of the word ministry. I wonder if the seminary wouldn't do the whole church a favor if the first and last course it taught seminary students might be entitled 101, Pastors Are Not God. I know that I had to learn that one the hard way. I just had a phone call from a young man who is in the ministry, a good friend of mine. In fact, it scared me. I thought I had a different opinion of him. He's been 18 months, and the place he's at, he has a call. He wants to go in the worst way, but he knows that if he leaves after 18 months, he's going to leave a congregation sort of in the lurch, and these all kinds of guilt is being laid on him, and he is saying they're using the law on me. But the God statement was, I got it all together. 100% of everything I would attempt was going to do is done. And now he can rationalize moving. That's another way we act like God. I think if I can just come back to that statement, I don't think you can learn to know people in less than 5 years. I also don't think you learn how to work with them in less than 5 years. Now, there are some exceptions to that, but a lot of times we run from experiences rather than facing them head on. And when something difficult happens in our first parish, if we could live through it and live through the forgiveness and the other things that have to happen in relationships and work that all through and come out of it, we're all stronger and we grow. And the person who leaves the parish prior to that kind of experience is just shortchanging himself and the richness of working together with other people. By the way, forgiveness is obviously the glue that holds the staff together. It's the glue that holds the congregation together. But so often when we don't get our way, we run. Or when we've done something wrong, a great goof. And, you know, you guys are going to goof in your first parish. I hate to admit all of the goofs that I made, but I had a parish that forgave me and who had lived through 7.5 years of being forgiven many different times. That helped me, I think, an awful lot in developing the attitudes where I was. So I think we need to remember that we can be forgiven, too, and to work through that whole thing. Now, I guess that if I can go at this point, I'd really like to share some practical experiences of what I have felt some of the real joys of working together in the team ministry are. And David, I have till 11:30, and then I quit. Okay. I suppose one of the things that was different when I came here to chapel, having experience working with the number of people on the staff that we had in the past parishes, was we had really one person, Professor. professional person on the staff who was out in the building during the day. To me, to be able to walk around the building just at a given daytime and share informally with the various staff people is probably one of the greatest joys of working in a team relationship. We sort of beat a path between, if we had carpet in our building, they would be worn between these various offices, because we need to spend 5 minutes here or 5 minutes there just simply sharing with one another. So one of the great joys is here you have other staff people who you can just share the day, some of maybe your joys or frustrations of that day. And I really find that perhaps the greatest joy of working in team ministry. Sociability, you have a built-in, obvious arrangement there where you have people that you have maybe a social relationship, not in a deep way, but in a way that you have a place where you can also go there. Most of all, it gives us the opportunity to multiply gifts and what I call specialize. That's a major point of what I'm going to say right now. I think we ought to get rid of all titles such as assistant or associate pastors. It's my feeling there's only one pastor in a congregation. I don't think there can be two. They're pastorally trained people. We have a number of pastorally trained people in our parish, but associate or assistant or whatever names you want to give these names, in a sense, are almost demeaning terms. I think we ought to move, especially in multiple ministries, to more of the specialist type of role, where a person is called into a parish and he is a specialist in that area, education, evangelism, and recognized as such, that he is the expert in that area. He provides the input. He may do some general ministry, but his major ministry is done in that specialist area. If you go into a larger parish and you're an assistant pastor, you probably won't preach that much, because in a large parish, everything that I feel about it, the head pastor probably ought to be preaching the most, unless he's just a lousy preacher. Simply because that's a place where you have continuity and you can relate to people more, and that's one way you get to the parish. So I think if you go into a multiple ministry, you ought to really be evaluating your gifts where you can specialize and go into them. And I really believe in the years to come, there's going to be more and more of that. There's going to be more multiple ministries than instead of small parishes. I think the larger staffs, large parishes need people, but they need people who are willing to specialize. I might even feel that it would be helpful for the seminary to have a 2 or 3 track program where they actually give general pastoral training, train people to be specialists in certain areas, help them here already identify their gifts. One of the concerns that I've seen happen in parish is a person comes in as an assistant pastor, as some of you will, and your job description, your call says you're to do this, and you do this, and this, and once you get there, you decide that I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and all of a sudden, you're doing what somebody else has already been called to do. I think if you already know what your gifts are, if you know where you can fit into a ministry, if you can recognize the importance of that specialty and then share it in a larger ministry. Unfortunately, most of the parishes that we have are still small parishes where you're on your own. But it's very difficult for a person who's been by himself to come into a large parish and fit into a team. And I don't know what you can do at the seminary for it to change it, but maybe the 1 or 2 track system would be another way to do it. Because I think we do need to help seminary students evaluate their gifts. One of the areas that I perhaps enjoy the most in team addition to the fact that I think we ought to approach ministry from a worship stance, is the whole area of planning and working through worship plans in a team kind of way. To me, that's the most enjoyable thing that I do. In fact, is I like leading worship. I like administering the sacraments. I like preaching. I think all of these things are probably the things that I enjoy the most. But to sit down with staff people and actually plan the worship is a really exciting thing to do. Now, in a small congregation, that can be difficult. If you inherit an organist like I had in my first parish, she didn't last too long, but I can still remember her. And this was a little parish. It had you had to see the building, one of these little typical rural congregations. The paint was coming off the outside, and they had a $10,000 kitchen in the basement, and water was running all over the basement floor except in the kitchen, and they made sure that was high enough to keep away from the water. And the altar area, in the church itself, there was not much focus. I mean, you know, it was a little altar and a place where you dressed off to the side about like this, and it had no ceiling on it. It was about this high, and I'm this tall. So to get my gown on, I had to do like this. Otherwise, they'd see my hands with the gown going over the top. And it was one of those kinds of things. So the organ was right up in the front, and the organist playing along one hymn. All of a sudden, she's just playing, and bang, she says, "Oh my goodness." Gets up, walks around to the back of the organ, which has a volume control. This is the congregation. And then gets back, that's better, and then goes on and plays. Now, you might have that kind of a person in your first parish. In fact, as I suspect that some of you might have a pretty good chance of having that kind of an organist. I love worship, I love music, and the first 3 years of my ministry was real pain because of the organist. And yet I did something there already that began the process. I thought, well, if you can't lick them, join them. And so what you do is I sat down with these people, and I ended up with several organists before we were done. And we would sit down just in a very informal way about five times a year, and I would share with them my worship plan. Right now, for example, I have planned the worship all the way through the Pentecost and Trinity Sunday. The hymns are all picked. The themes for the day are all picked. That's all been done. Now, the reason for that is that you can work together with the other people. Now, that just didn't happen by myself, but we're in the process of doing it. But in a small parish, just to show you how you can do this, this is your team person now. Your organist, you very patiently, if that person is not, well, maybe the person's already blessed with, maybe she's not the kind that I described, has some understanding of worship, then you can immediately involve that person in helping you plan it. But what I had to do is I had to sit down and teach them what Lutheran worship was all about. I had to teach them an understanding of the liturgy. I taught them of the value of picking the few preludes that they had, at least that would relate to the service for the day. I even ordered them this very simple. I could almost play with one hand these preludes and voluntaries and so on that they had at that time that matched the various days of the year. There's all kinds of resources that I learned about in the process of teaching them how to understand worship. By the time I had finished there, they were contributing from their end to help in the planning. They would make suggestions. So that was in a small parish. That's how we got them involved. And it was exciting because they began to see all the possibilities of our Lutheran heritage. And I can't emphasize enough the beauty of our Lutheran worship. I think we are crazy if we dump that for anything else. That's the foundation of our theology, and it's so rich if we use it and do it in a meaningful way. And you can do that if you plan and work together with other people. You can really make our Lutheran worship exciting. You can teach new things if they work with you. In fact, as I would have to simply say that in my second parish, I learned more about worship there than I thought I could ever learn from the music person who was the principal of the school and the music person. He immediately volunteered to do all the research for me. And so what he would do is he would take a look at all the hymns, all the scripture readings for that period of time, and he would come in with hymn suggestions. And I would sit down with him, and we would work together. We had another organist, and she got involved in the process. We taught her along with it. We would then go about the process of evaluating what was best in terms of orders of worship, new things to teach, new liturgies. About that time, they were starting to send out some of this experimental stuff, and so we were using those whatever way we could. We printed out the entire order of service to make it flexible, but still we made it very Lutheran, and it was really exciting. This man probably did more for me in learning about worship than any particular person, because he researched all this stuff and showed me possibilities that I never knew before. And then the vicars got involved. I mean, this was a task they didn't like, but they had to write a resume of each, or a synopsis of each of the scripture readings and the theme for the day. We usually let it go on through if it was okay, but they had to understand the propers before the week came up. They had to write all that stuff. And I felt that it was the best thing I could do for a vicar, to show them the wonderful progression of the church year and how rich that is for preaching, how rich that is for leading our people. And so I had 15 years, by the way, I have 15 years of vicars, synopses of all these different readings. Now that when we went to the new series, then of course some of those didn't apply anymore, but since 74, what is that, that's 13 years, I've got an awful lot of interesting comments. I look back at some of these now, and I steal a few when it comes to writing them out now, and we're trying to figure out who might work those things out in that area. In my last parish, we also involved, we had a worship board and a committee where we threw a number of things at them in addition to that, and we involved a number of the staff people again in the worship planning. I've gotten so spoiled with the organist and the music director picking all the hymns that I just didn't even begin to attempt it in my last parish. I always reserved veto power. That was all I reserved. And in the sense of saying, I don't think we're ready for that particular hymn. The organist then would tell you how to teach it. It would show you what the best way to do it. You had the resources of the choirs. You had all your music people ready to go. And even now, they're ready to go. Now, here at Chapel of the Cross, it's a different kind of situation. Henry, where are you? Henry Gerke is now working with us also on the staff. Henry is providing rich resources for us already, and I don't know what the long-term view is, but I enjoy having him there because he also, in the last meeting we had with our worship staff, provided a great deal of input. If he were out there full-time, he would be doing things a little bit more. But Chapel of the Cross was a non-liturgical church, and I'm Lutheran, okay? And so I set about the business of saying, if I'm going to be Lutheran, and I enjoy the Lutheran heritage, then obviously as a worship leader and providing that kind of leadership, maybe we ought to teach the congregation where they're going. We now have taught them Divine Two, the first setting, almost. There's a few things yet to go. We're in the process in the Easter season routine. The last thing, I think, is one of the, well, there's a couple of things, but the next thing we're teaching is the offertory. And what you do this is use the choirs to teach it, and the congregation isn't threatened. And piece by piece, you bring those things in. But you need, the point I'm trying to make is you need the other people on the staff to help you do it. You cannot do this alone. Now, I think you could take this into any particular area of ministry you might have. I just used worship as an example of how you can work together, planning, pulling resources together, looking at the various things that you do. And to make that possible, obviously, you have to, as a staff, be able to meet together, to be able to communicate, and probably one of the key things that we've done over the years is simply done that, is always set up opportunities for planning and meeting together on a very regular basis, as well as the informal basis, and that way communication keeps going. One thing I do not appreciate as a pastor in a congregation is surprises. Fact is, if somebody surprises me on a staff, I get angry. In fact, I even tell staff that ahead of time. If you want to get me angry, surprise me. And if I surprise you, then you have a right to get angry with me. Because surprises are dealing below the deck. It's hidden below the belt. And it's not fair. I think we need to communicate what we're feeling with one another so that everything is up front, and if we're going to disagree, then perhaps it's time that we disagree in a real positive way. I might simply say this, that I had, boy, you can see I'm not going to make this. One of the major problems with pastorally trained people is we don't know how to confront. We are taught to be caring and loving, so how do we confront one another? And so rather than confront one another in a team situation, when something's going wrong, we'll just let it simmer and just builds up until everything blows. Or we pocket veto, which means we just put it on our desk and deliberately hope it goes away. And it doesn't. It really doesn't. If something is really working out there that needs to be confronted, you might as well confront it in an evangelical, loving way right away, rather than let all that steam build up and then later on hope that you can undo that particular thing. But we need to somewhere some training on how to confront an issue in a way where we don't get angry, where we don't explode, but we actually do sit down and talk about it together. A rule that I've always had with staff is we can yell at each other in the office, but once we get out of the office, we're together. We arrive together. We do it together. Congregational people will do their best to try to put wedges between us. And I just think that we just have to simply do everything we can to make sure that happens through good communication. Now, there are a lot of things I suppose I could share. Perhaps I would like to share a couple of the frustrations I think that also go with it in addition to this. It's obvious that team relationships, no matter how hard you might work at them, are not always going to be the best. And there are a number of reasons. I think the primary reasons are that the members of the team forget their roles. They forget that what their call was all about, or they try to jump into somebody else's. Most of the problems that I've had to deal with as a pastoral leader were not necessarily people that were jumping on me, but people that were jumping on one another. You're on my turf, or you're on my turf, and we had to redefine what the turf was. If we are in ministry together, there really isn't any turf. We're always looking for ways that we can share our gifts, and roles change. But by the same token, I think you have to be there, and you have to make it an orderly kind of change so that everybody understands when those roles are changing. But by the same token, unless the congregation changes a call is still the same. I think we have to respect that until we made those kinds of changes. I think that that's why in most parishes that I've been in, we not only insisted that a reasonably good job description be developed for the call. And a job description doesn't have to be 10 pages long. It's usually one page is the best. But then in addition to that, we ask each staff person after they come on staff to develop an operational manual to put down in detail the things they do. That helps us in several ways. One, when that person needs replacing, we have an idea what all of the things that person did. And then in addition to that, we're able to take a look at that as a team. And we generally, and we're working on one right now at Chapel of the Cross. We're not that far along because we're still in the development of staff. But that we would be able to hand that to each staff person a general operational manual showing what the other staff people are doing. And they have a better understanding, well, this person's doing this and this person's doing that. Because quite often you get the complaint, well, I come in the office at 8 o'clock and he comes in at 9:30 and he's getting paid more than I am. And what they don't understand is maybe between 7:30 and 9:30, this person was doing something else somewhere else, but doing it for the church. And I think an understanding of how that works, I think some of the major problems that occur between staff is jealousies with regard to salaries, jealousies with regard to how they're being treated. And that's why I think it's important that the pastor or the head pastor is one who tries his level best to be as fair with all of them as he can and give attention to staff. Staff want attention from the head pastor. They want his time. And you've got to give him that time. To be in a large parish, if you're going to be the head pastor, you just have to understand that it's going to take a great deal of your time just in dealing with staff. But that's how you multiply the whole ministry. I might also say that as we look at staff, one of the things that has to be made very clear is that no person on the staff is bigger than the whole. That's why there has to be some kind of order developed. Someone who's responsible for everyone else. The newspaper this last week obviously gave us a classic example of, in our own Lutheran circles, at least, of someone who is, from all apparent purposes, bigger than the staff. Otis, you read the paper. At least that's the story. I'm a member of the board, and he didn't want to abide by the rules. Now, maybe there was another way of resolving it. I don't know. I wasn't in on that part of it. But no one is bigger than the rest of the staff, not even the pastor. I think that we all have a part in it, but we're not bigger. When it comes to the kinds of things that you're going to run into in staff relationships, don't be surprised. Either as a member of a staff or maybe somebody who's providing leadership, you'll run into everything from immorality, wife swapping, personality conflicts, lawsuits, jealousies, team seduction, you name it, it's going to happen. Don't be surprised by it. I think that what you have to do is decide when you're going to intervene and how you're going to intervene when there is a particular problem. I guess I would have to simply say this, that in a parish it's very easy to become, to immediately judge. When you're in an area like that, it's very easy to jump in when you should maybe have waited a while. I think that patience is the one virtue that I pray for as much as any particular virtue, because I think you have to constantly give things time. Sometimes they'll work themselves out, but you don't deal quickly on issues. I guess, in a number of ways. I write myself, by the way, personal notes every day. I have a little card that I plan my day on. At the very top of the card, I write a number of things that I think help me remember how to deal with that. The first one on the top of the card is don't be threatened. Be positive, because you don't solve things being negative. You'll build on the positive, not the negative, and always stay under control. Now, I write those notes, I've been writing those notes to myself every day of the year for the last 24 years at least. Now, you think I would not have to do that anymore. But no, I keep having to write those things there because as a human being, it's so easy to forget how you are to deal with people and that you are not to be threatened, that we shouldn't make idle threats either, but that we should really, as we work together, we should try to build the best, to work the best way we possibly can to build the other people up. When there's conflict, to stand above it rather than get involved in it. One of the best pieces of advice that was ever given to me, when you have members fighting one another, when you have staff fighting one another, don't take sides. You're the pastor. You ultimately have to pick up the pieces. If you're in there fighting, you've joined one of the armies, and the only thing you can do is lose. When armies develop in a parish, you've lost. Don't try to build armies. They don't win anything. But when you stand above this, then you can be what you were called to be, a servant to all of the people. Now, there's a lot more I can say. It's 11:30, and I obviously have not worked through a number of the things I would like to share. But I do have a document that I was going to go through with you. But I'm not going to do that now. Maybe we'll just hand it out. But there's a statement on the very end of it that I think perhaps summarizes everything that I'm trying to say. This particular document, by the way, is a guidelines for relationships among, and I have blank personality. It could be for any parish. It's a larger parish. We developed it with the idea in mind that when you have a number of people, there has to be some kinds of rules, some kinds of ways that you work with one another. It defines who's responsible for who, because this has to be done. But the very last statement that it makes is simply this. Staff members, and that includes everybody, are servants of the servants. I guess that would probably be the stance where I would have to come from again. We do our best job when we are servants, when we are good worshipers. It's 11:30. You asked me to allow some time for questions, so I will stop.
Well, thank you very much. One time I gave a speech to the joint faculties and Dr. Weber was chairing it, and everybody clapped when I finished, and he leaned over and said, "Now they're going to tear you apart." So we're not going to do that. Are there any questions or comments?
So what you're saying is that if we spend too much time visiting, we don't get any work done. Well, I would suspect that the kinds of tasks that if a parish is that big, it is a large parish. parish, or if the parish can allow for those kinds of things to happen, then, you know, there's a problem there. I think the demands of most of the ministries in our place would just not allow for that. You know, there's enough pressure from the task itself that would keep it. I suppose that, again, is the responsibility of the person who's the leader of the staff, that if he saw that happening, that he would confront that and say, hey, guys, we're wasting time here. I think we have to sit down and evaluate ourselves. We meet regularly. By meeting regularly and having reports and what we're doing, that, I think, would be one bit of a safeguard. But an example of what I'm talking about, you know, I can spend about an hour at my desk at one time working on a sermon, sometimes 2 hours, and I've got to at least spend 5 minutes to clear my head, and that's when I do that. Now, our offices are kind of in a shambles. We are all over the building, and so it makes it a little bit tougher here. But if the offices are in a proper line together in a proper way, then you can you don't have to spend a lot of time doing that. Sometimes it's just a friendly hello, or somebody's got his head down and he just looks like he needs a little bit of support, or just a friendly, there's a lot of good ministry that's shared, good ideas that are shared during that time, but we don't spend a lot of time at it. But it's the fact that we know we're doing it. In other words, you're dealing on the feeling as well as the planning level. I suppose, Dr. Schultz, you're in the monthly meeting. You could probably answer that. I think some of that comes out there. It's, we allow for each person to share their ministry, and I think they share some of the things that they're enjoying and some of the things they're not. I think we try to make it an opportunity for this. I personally meet with each of the full-time members of the staff for anywhere from a half hour to 45 minutes a week myself in addition. I just think that's essential because what you're doing is they're telling me where they need my support, or I'm telling them where I need theirs, or that also gives us the opportunity to share some of our frustrations individually. Sometimes it isn't always the most helpful to unload that in front of everybody either. And if it's it gives the opportunity to work that way. So I would say yes. Where you have to remember where we're at now. As I look back, I would say more than that. But now we're still building staff, so we're experimenting with how we fit together, and that's kind of fun. That's really exciting. I think if in front of the whole staff, if you share personal concerns with people, sometimes you run close to breaking confidences. Or the other thing is that you tend to prejudice the rest of the staff against an individual. I think teaching staffs do a beautiful job of that. I've watched them in faculty meetings take 2 or 3 children and discuss them upside and down. And then this kid's got to go through all these teachers if he's in the second grade. And there's immediately they're put into a slot, and I think that it really is not fair to prejudice people. The other thing is that I may have a terrible time getting along with one of the members, and somebody else on the staff may be having a good time. Well, thank God, because maybe that's the way it's meant to be. I can't relate to everybody, And so why should I tell that other person how frustrated I am with him when they're getting along with him? And I think they need to have the opportunity to relate to a number of different people. And I think to be able to not be threatened by the fact that someone doesn't like me or they like somebody else, that's multiple staff. That's one of the blessings of multiple staff. It takes the heat off of everybody. You have, if somebody's after me, they can be after me for a while, not everybody else, and they can relate to somebody else in the staff. Sometimes it's a junk thing, but I would say, what feelings, joys, those kinds of things, and frustrations toward ministry, even frustrations about an aspect of the job, something you don't want to do anymore. You know, I think if somebody on my staff said, I don't want to do this anymore, they ought to tell me. I might have to say to them, well, until we can find somebody else to do it, you've got to do it. But at least we could talk about how we can make it more meaningful or help you through it. I think it isn't just my job, but I think one another on the staff, we can support one another and help each other look at things sometimes with a better perspective by talking about it together. That's why two heads are better than one. Don't be threatened. Don't lose control. Be positive. Don't pocket veto. There's a couple others. Those are the main ones. Those are the ones that I have to remind myself about all the time, because it's real easy to develop paranoia in the ministry. Everybody's against you, you know, that kind of thing. They're not. They really are not. Even on a stewardship drive, boy, you know, we just went through one. And you ought to read the comments. If you really take them personally, you'd go bananas. But these people are just unloading on the most convenient place they can unload, on the church. But I got a Valentine card. Somebody must have realized it was stewardship time, because I got a big Valentine, this beautiful description. It was in the mail yesterday. Beautiful description of what a pastor is, and like it was me, from all the members of Chapel of the Cross. I don't know who did it, but I know it wasn't from all the members, but by the same token, it that kind of picks you up too. You know, there are people out there, the silent ones don't necessarily say much, but you know they're there. You just can't really take too seriously that kind of stuff. But don't be threatened, because it's easy to be. It is real easy to be. Yes? Yeah, like I said, I meet with all of the full-time staff people once a week. Now, that does not include all of the secretarial.